Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. This is Pulling Your Eyelids Open. I'm your host, Russell Price, the publisher of Be There Magazine. We're celebrating 45 years of publishing. And on our newsmaker line, we have a wonderful, awesome gentleman. He's the CEO and the president of GP Promotions. His name is Gerard Pinkney. Gerard, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Russell. I'm glad to be here.
Man, let me tell you, you are truly a pillar in the community as far as promotions and productions and things that you do in the D.C. area. Tell us about GP Productions, how it started, what's it about, what you do.
All right. Well, GP Promotions, we started back in 2009. Actually, I had some partners prior to that, and we were doing parties and stuff with DJs. And actually, one of my friends, who is now my partner, Dee, she knew Gerald Austin, and she came to the guys and, you know, me and my partners, and asked us if we wanted her to do us a favor, do us a favor, and asked Gerald if he would come down and perform for us. And we all agreed, and so Mr. Green and Michelle Daly, who owned Zanzibar at the time, I spoke with them, and they agreed to let us have the show there. They were fans of Gerald Austin, so they were happy to have him in. But, you know, we were new promoters, and it was a first-time promotion. So, you know, they took a chance on us. And when the time came to do the show, actually my partners sort of backed out on me. They got cold feet. And Ms. D, she stepped up and said that she would go in on the promotion with me. And we've been working together at that ever since then. So it was a great show. Actually, Zanzibar wasn't even prepared for what the crowd that we had. They didn't even have enough food. But it was a very successful show. And that was in 2009, and that was the beginning of GP Promotions, as it is now known.
That's excellent. I mean, really excellent, because what you have done with GP Promotions is you started promoting a venue that was supposed to be really good, but it tried to be even better. So you were doing something that nobody else had ever did before. You did something that was so profound, and a lot of people were doing events of that magnitude back in the day with big corporations, you know, like Tiger Productions or Larry Beasley, maybe
right,
like the Eclipse or something like that. But nobody like yourself, a single individual, would attempt
right
to do an event like that. So I want to, you know, really commend you for really, you know, taking a chance and doing something, you know, pursuing your dream to that point where you said, hey, I'm going to try this, and it worked. I mean, it really worked. But I was there for that Gerald Austin show, because Gerald Austin was with the Manhattans. For him to even do a single show by himself like that was phenomenal. You know, that was something that he did not normally do on his own. How did you get to do bigger promotions when you started doing the productions and the promotions? But when you did these big promotions, when GP Promotions started doing bigger venues, what led you to get into these bigger venues?
Right. Well, we had to build ourselves up now, but I'm going to tell you, I was very fortunate because, as I mentioned, Gerald Austin was my first production, and so I wasn't starting at the bottom. So from there, my next promotion was Gene Chandler. So how big can you get? You know, especially mm-hmm. during that time period. So the next production was Gene Chandler at Zanzibar. And that, again, was another very successful show. So those two shows really helped me to establish GP Promotions as a major player, at least in the old school R&B field in the DMV. So from there on, I just met other people and established relationships with the next show actually I had was a local national act, Skip Mahoney and the Casuals. So I tried to stay, you know, with the national acts, and more and more I started getting noticed by the national acts, and I was meeting people like Russell Tompkins and, people from Blue Magic Organization and other national acts who had heard about GP Promotions doing national acts in the DMV. So that helped me get established.
And you even had one of my favorite groups, and I got a chance to interview him at one of your events. You had the Moments, Ray Goodman and Brown. I mean, who does that? I mean, a simple promoter. You know, a lot of times it's hard to get to do productions of your magnitude with certain stars because these big promoters or big people who was controlling the venues, they don't let people in like that sometimes. It's hard to get in. Or they try to sabotage acts.
Right. That's true. It is very hard to get recognized and get, an opportunity to work with a lot of these major acts. The other thing that I wanted to point out is I had a lot of help from a lot of great people, and I want to shout out Willie Bennett, who is now one of my best friends. I didn't know him before I got started in the business. And he became a real a mentor to me. He at the time he was managing acts such as at which he still does Heat Wave, Ray Goodman and Brown, Otis, and several other acts. And he showed me a lot of the ropes and introduced me to a lot of the players in the. On the scene as far as acts of that magnitude. So I do want to shout out Willie Bennett, and he was a big help in our establishment of GP Promotions. So you can't be successful in this business without establishing relationships, and he was the reason that I have some relationships with a lot of the national acts, and just taking it from there.
You're so correct. When you're in business, you can't do nothing without having what I call a successful team around you or people that want to invest in you, people that want to help support you. I tell people all the time, whatever your dream is, whatever you want to accomplish, surround yourself with great people or people that will surround yourself around you and see your cause or see your purpose. I know starting Russell's News 45 years ago, I knew nothing about publishing. And like you say, you have to surround yourself around people who are publishing or doing things that you want to do. And I surround myself around Kathy Hughes. I mean, I met Kathy Hughes when she was, you know, in the station living there. But if you surround yourself by the right people and they help you with your dream, it comes to be, it'll come, your dream will come true. But you took it to another league. I want to ring the bell for you, because what you did with GP Promotions is you decided to do quality events. I mean, you didn't do haphazard events or just some little event somewhere. You took an event at Zanzibar, and Zanzibar didn't have events like that before you. You took an event with Gene Chandler and Gerald Austin. I was at both those events. I was at the magazine, was there covering the magazine, shooting live video, doing all kind of stuff at those events. And it was a people didn't realize the history that was being made in Southwest. Could you imagine having Southwest today? There's nothing in Southwest of that magnitude now. Not for black people. There's nothing like that you could do in Southwest like that. Nothing. And we had that whole waterfront back then, you know, Zanzibar, H2O, Pier 7. I mean, it was a magnitude for African-Americans to go to Southwest on the water. That's not true today.
I tell you, I certainly miss that. I know that you and I and many others spent many years down there on the waterfront at Channel N, and it really was the mecca for old school entertainment and enjoyment at the time. So I miss that, and hopefully one day we'll find somewhere else where we can get together and enjoy ourselves. But in the meantime, you can come to my shows, and I still see a lot of the same people that I used to hang out with down at the Channel End. They still support me, and that's a beautiful thing.
That's an awesome thing. When you still had the support and the people that supported you years ago, that's supporting you today, and even during the pandemic, tell us how the pandemic affected live entertainment. Tell us what it did in your world, in your business. What kind of impact did this pandemic have on your business?
Well, it had quite a impact on GP Promotions. Actually, the last show that I had was in March of 2020. That was before we even knew everything was going to shut down. That was the last show that I had. I had that at Harmony Hall, and actually was Skip Mahoney and the Casuals at Harmony Hall in Fort Washington. And, you know, I started with Skip, and, you know, up until that pandemic, that was the last show that I did. Unfortunately, that also was the last show that Skip was able to do. You know, Skip passed recently, and I love that brother. I mean, I go back a long ways with him, and I certainly miss him, and, you know, the people who loved him and his fans, they all miss Skip. But that was the last show that I did during the, you know, after the pandemic. That was March of 2020. And the ironic part about it is that 2020, I had already set in my mind that 2020 was going to be a real breakout year for me. I had already scheduled, and the ticket sales were going great. I had already scheduled a show for April of 2020 with Enchantment and Ray Goodman and Brown on the same show at Bethesda Blues and Jazz. Ticket sales were going great. And I also had scheduled a show with Russell Tompkins and the New Stylistics with Eddie Holman on the same show at Bethesda Blues and Jazz. So that was just a start from what I had planned to do in 2020. Well, of course, both of those shows have been postponed, I still plan to do those shows, but since March of 2020, when this pandemic hit and everything shut down, I have not done much. I've done a couple of virtual shows for the Maryland National Park and Planning Commission. But other than that, I haven't done anything, and I'm looking forward to getting back out there. I do have a couple of shows planned, and hopefully they will be successful and people will start coming out again.
Well, I think people will come out once everybody gets vaccinated and gets closer to the fall. I think people will start slowly coming out and dusting themselves. But people miss that camaraderie of entertainment. Entertainment is a big force in a person's life. To see a good show, to see some good food, good entertainment, good atmosphere, those things will never die. And it's got to come back eventually. And will it come back the same magnitude? Maybe not, but it's got to come back to some degree. But I guarantee you what you're doing will never die because you have what they call quality. You put quality in it and excellence in it. And then you get groups that from old school, people still love old school groups. It's amazing that some of these groups don't stay together. You know, they don't. I come from the old school area where you had the stylistics. Russell Tompkins was the stylistics. How could you come up with another stylistics and don't have Russell Tompkins in? I don't understand how that stuff works with the business, but I just wish that some of the groups would stay together. The original people would stay together. I know you had Death and all that, but when you have people break off and you got to say Russell Tompkins and the Stylistics, when you say the Stylistics, it should have been just Russell Tompkins. He was the Stylistics. It's just crazy how some of these groups, they break off and have – I went to see the Intruders one time, and I'm looking at who are these people? You follow what I'm saying? That's not the Intruders.
Right.
I mean, what is that about? You know, and you put the name up there on the billboard, and the public is buying the ticket, but when they come to the show, because I'm from Philadelphia, I knew the Intruders. I know who the Intruders are. Sure, some of them are dead, but you just can't make up groups like that. I don't know how it works or why they do it, but it seems to happen a lot, you know, where you have, I don't know how.
Yeah, it does. It does happen a lot, and you know, you have original members who, legally have the right, you know, if the group breaks up, the original members legally have the right to go forward with their own groups. And that's how it happens. I mean, they may not be able to use the original name, but they use some, you know, some part of the name so that people will recognize who they are. But it's nothing you can do. It's nothing that can be done about that because it is legal, you know, for original members of the group to go forward with the groups. You know, it works. It works sometimes, and then sometimes it doesn't. And I try to stay true to the original groups, though. When I hire the groups, I'm not too big on the splinter groups. So it's rare that you'll see me with promoting a national act that's pretty much a splinter group of the original. So that's just my feeling about it.
Give me your take on what they call open mic. What does open mic contest of? Because you have an eye for talent. You have an eye for doing promotions and shows. I used to go to Pier 7 or other places when they have this thing called open mic, and you see someone who could really sing. They have the talent and all that, but they come every single Wednesday or every single Sunday and just sing at this open mic, but never take it to a level where they want to hone their craft or become an actual professional singer. Why is that?
Well, I mean, I don't view it as they don't want to become professional singers. They want to be seen. They want to be discovered. And the only way they're going to be seen or discovered is to do some open mics. Now, I have been very supportive of local artists that I have seen at open mics. As a matter of fact, on my first Gene Chandler show, I had local talent that I had, discovered, but I saw on open mic at Channel N, and they opened the show for me for Gene Chandler. I tried to, and I still do, a lot of the local acts that are very good, and it is some very, very talented people in the DMV. I've used them to open shows on national acts, and that gives them some credibility. That helps them to bolster their resumes so that, they'll get other opportunities. I have no problem with open mic because that's really the only platform that a lot of people have to show their talent. So, they go out there and they do it for free. But, once you establish yourself, you need to sort of back off that open mic thing because people are not going to want to pay money to see you on Saturday when they can go on Friday night and catch you at an open mic for free. So they have to keep that in mind. But I have nothing against open mic. A lot of the tribute artists out here right now, the local tribute artists in here in D.C., they started with open mic, and now they're getting, gigs where people pay to hear them sing. So, it's a proving ground, and it gives you a chance to work on your craft and get better. So open mics are fine. If you have talent, it'll be discovered through open mics. So I don't have a problem with that.
Well, no question. You have people that stand on the corner and be discovered, or sing in the subway that be discovered. If you're truly talented and you truly are gifted, you can get on the bus. People have gotten on a bus and went to Nashville with just a bus ticket. And when they get off the bus and start singing on a corner, somebody discovers them, and they become big stars.
Right.
And then you have American Idol. That's what American Idol is all about. They go from city to city and just discover people, and people become famous. They become big time just by being on American Idol. So if you have real talent, you can do it. When it comes to promotions, companies like yourself, I came here in the 70s. Like I say, we're celebrating 45 years of publishing. There was a company called Dimension Unlimited, which was giving out shows back in the day. Dimension Unlimited was really, and there was another one, Tiger Power, I think they were, I forgot the name of it, but they were doing these local black acts. How did some company like a Live Nation become to be where they are today and control big acts like Beyonce? And how that happen? How did that happen?
Well, I mean, it's all about money. A lot of these companies like Live Nation and some of the other larger ones, it's a struggle for companies like myself to compete with them. You know, they've blocked out several of the venues in the DMV that I would like to do shows at, but they have contracts with these venues, and these venues won't allow local promoters or anyone else other than these large national companies. So that really does handicap someone like myself, who's a local promoter. Or I call myself a local promoter, but I promote all over the world. But I'm from the DMV, and that's primarily where my base is. But it's difficult. It's difficult to compete with some of these companies because, like I said, they write contracts with these venues that cause them to not allow local promoters. I have MGM right in my backyard, and I can't get into that theater. And I have shows that I know people would love, but, you know, like
you
said, you
mean to tell me
if companies like,
you were doing a show at MGM, if you tried to do a show at MGM, MGM would say no, or Live Nation would say no, tell MGM they can't do it? How does that work
right,
when you get...
Right, I've been told that by MGM. I've tried, I've contacted them about doing shows in their theater, you know, but...
they should
I
be
know
begging you to do a show right now. As bad as it is right now and the pandemic and all that, they should be grateful for you to do a show there. They should even want you to do a show there because there's nothing there now. The MGM ballroom is dead. The MGM theater's dead. I mean, there's shows that I'm quite sure they got big acts, but there's some off days that you could put a nice show in MGM theater. You could do a nice show there.
Oh, definitely, but, you know. I've tried to get in there ever since they opened, and I've had no luck. I've used personal contacts. I've, you know, gone through, you know, every other way that I know how. But, you know, I'm not going to, you know, for me, I'm not going to press it. I have opportunities. I don't, you know, I don't worry about things that I can't do. I do things I can do. And there's plenty of opportunities out there for me. But I would like to get in there. There are several venues I would like to get in. You know, there was a time when I, you know, when I had to struggle to get into Bethesda Blues and Jazz when I was, you know, when they first started and was making a name for themselves. But now I'm at the point where, you know, I can pretty much do anything I want there because I've established myself there. So, you know, it takes time to work your way up. But I think that my company now is at the point where I shouldn't always have to try to prove myself because I believe the company has proved that they can promote and produce great shows.
And that's what you do. You promote great shows, and if you do great work, people will come and support your venue or what you want to do. I mean, I remember Blue Valley was a small little venue in Georgetown. But they had the power to attract major acts. Like, I mean, you're talking about major acts. Like Jerry Butler. Jerry Butler would come to Blues Alley every single Valentine's Day for like 20 years. He could perform in some big venue somewhere. But he would come to Blues Alley and perform every Valentine's Day. Every Valentine's Day.
He'd stay there 4 or 5 days in a row, you know. Being a small
small venue like that, you know. I mean, he had some of the biggest acts that come through Blue, Gil Scott Heron. I mean, there's a lot of acts over the years that would perform at a venue like Blues Alley, which is a small venue. It's maybe a 150-seated venue. It's not a big venue. But they could perform at bigger places, but they would come there. I don't know whether they had some kind of connection with the promotion people or the acts, whatever, but they got some good acts to come to that particular venue. Do you think that somewhere today in D.C. or maybe Maryland you could have a little quaint venue like that come up again, like some kind of place, like another Pier 7, you know, where you had a Channel N, where you had a venue like that, where you had a food and restaurant and... I mean, that venue was, it wasn't so much people came because of the band. They came because of the venue. You know, it was on the water. You had a restaurant on one side. You had live entertainment on the other side, the drinks and the camaraderie. You had a hotel. Would you think we'll have something like that again in D.C.?
Well, I tell you, I don't think there could ever be another Channel N. I mean, We I was down there at least 30 years. I started going down there when I was in my 20s, and I was there until the last day they ended. And it was about the camaraderie, you know, that's what it was all about. And I've, you know, when Channel N closed, I searched myself for a venue that I could have the people come out to and enjoy themselves. I didn't want to lose that crowd. I didn't want to lose that camaraderie that we had. I did open a place in Fort Washington for a while. I think I called it Channel 2 at 360 or whatever. And, you know, it went well, but the problem was it was in Prince George's County, and to be quite honest, they didn't really want black clubs in Prince George's County, and so they were never able to get a license where people could dance, you know. And
right.
That was the problem with that venue. I got the people to come out now, and I brought over the third generation band that was at Channel N, but they weren't allowed to dance. And you know, we were used to dancing and partying, and they never were able to get a cabaret license so that it could actually be a real party. It was more, you know, sitting down eating and listening to the entertainment. Well, that wasn't the crowd that was coming there. The crowd that I drew was the crowd from the Channel N that wanted to come out and dance and have a good time. So after a while, I sort of just pulled the plug on that one because people, you know, weren't getting the satisfaction that they wanted from that. So I haven't seen anything yet that replaces Channel N. There's nothing out there that I know of.
Well, you're absolutely correct, because I've been going to Channel N probably over 40 years. It's
right.
been a venue that was, you had to go there, especially on a Friday night. People came there on a Friday night. You know, Saturday was okay, but Friday was definitely a Channel N night. And before that,
right.
it was Hogate. It was Hogate,
right.
man. You had band dancing at Hogate on a Tuesday night. And then you had, when it turned to H2O, and then you had Foxtrot 2. See, before Zanzibar, it was called Foxtrot 2. They made that place the second Foxtrot location. And that was, you had to live that whole era of the last 45, 50 years of being in D.C.
Yeah.
when it was chopped. City, you know, I tell people, you don't understand what the city was until you lived it. To be able to get in your car and go to three different states in one night, you could go to Virginia, come back from Virginia, go up on U Street, go on George Avenue, come down George Avenue, go to South. This is all in one night, and everywhere you went,
oh, yeah.
there was some black. It was from black people. You could
oh, yeah.
go all up on H Street, all up on U Street. I mean, 14th and
oh,
U.
Yeah.
And, I mean, all these clubs, people don't realize if you're young or you just come to Washington, D.C., you have no idea of that lifestyle.
Yeah,
people don't know.
Yeah.
Even black people today have no idea what it was like to drive down Southwest, park your car underground in an underground parking lot, come up on an elevator, and there's black people in the lobby, black people inside the restaurant, black people inside the Channel N. That was phenomenal. It was phenomenal.
Right, right.
When they
right.
tried to do that some other place, they would shut it down. You know, they would, if you saw, like when they
exactly.
had the club over there in National Harbor, that nightclub in National Harbor, when those black people was in the lobby,
right.
they shut the whole club down.
Right, right, right. I agree that... It's crazy. Even at the Gaylord over there, when they had started out with that Posh Club, and
right.
I thought that was going to be the venue. And the next thing I know, you had to be checked into the hotel and all of these other kinds of restrictions.
Well,
they never really wanted.
Shut it down.
Yeah, yeah.
They
I don't know whatever happened
club.
To that.
They had a nightclub inside the Grand Hyatt, called Impulse. It was the awesomest club. It was like a discotheque. When they saw the black people in that lobby of the Grand Hyatt, they shut that club down, rebuilt it, and called it a sports bar. Nobody, the average person don't even remember the club called Impulse. Don't even remember it.
Right.
Don't even They have no idea it was there. They have no idea it ever existed because they shut it down so fast. So it's truly something I would call not only fantastic, but it's something that is phenomenal that you had the opportunity to live that. What's the one thing you wish you had known when you began GP Promotions?
Well, let's see. When I began GP Promotions, there's a lot that I wish I had known because I was new to the business. Like I said, I've been blessed. I can't really answer that question because I had great people to help me all along the way. I knew enough to ask questions of people who had done it before. So it wasn't like I was working in the dark. And that to me is something that new promoters need to learn, is to ask questions of people who have done it. Don't think don't try to reinvent the wheel, because that makes it more difficult, and it actually lessens your chance of being successful. So like I said, I don't know. I can't answer that question because I've been fortunate,
Who are the three people who have been the most influential to you? You name one person. Name two more people that was really influential to you.
Right. Well, I can do that. Like I said, of course, Willie Bennett, Skip Mahoney, because after I did this show in, I think it was 2010, maybe about a year later, they came to me and asked me if I would manage their group. Skip Mahoney and the Casuals. Well, I had never managed to entertain, a group before, so that was totally new to me. But I agreed to do it because we were friends. I go back to high school with George and Skip and at Central High School, so I was very aware of their group. I was always a fan, so I agreed to do it. And We were able to really do some great things. I traveled with them to Germany several times. We were all, we went out to California several times to be on some very big shows. So my association with Skip Mahoney and the Casuals, they did a lot for my career and for my confidence in knowing that I could make it in this business. Managing a group, it gave me an opportunity to see both sides of the business, because not only was I a promoter, now I was representing a group, so I'm very sympathetic to the artists as well as to the promoters and to the different venues that I have to negotiate with. So I would have to say Skip Mahoney was very important in my career. And the last one that I definitely want to give credit to was, again, Gerald Austin. Gerald Austin, that show that he agreed to do for us, gave us the seed money to do the next show, which, as I mentioned, was Gene Chandler. But he did it for little or nothing, just out of friendship. And we made quite a bit of money on that show, and we were able to go forward with the next show with Gene Chandler. And as a matter of fact, Gene was very gracious in helping a new promotion company. He didn't have to agree to come to Zanzibar. I mean, he was big time. And So Gene Chandler was very influential in my success of GP Promotions. So those are some of the people that I want to shout out and give credit to.
Excellent, excellent. Three good people, three great people. Skip Mahoney and Gene Chandler and Gerald Austin, three great people. I mean, Skip Mahoney, he was a phenomenal entertainer. I remember, and this has got to be 30 years ago, maybe 35 years ago, he was singing by himself. I think it was him and his sister. They were singing every Friday at a club called Triangle on 8th Street, Northeast Washington. And it was a quaint little place. It only held about maybe 80 people. And he would sing his heart out like he was singing to 150 or 300 people. And the food was great, with soul food. But he was that kind of guy. He could sing at a little venue or he could sing at a big venue. He could sing by himself or he could sing with the casuals. But he was multi-talented and well-loved. I mean, with his name, Skip Mahoney, was a household name in this town. But if you said Skip Mahoney and the casuals, people knew Skip Mahoney of who he was. And for him to even do shows to a new promoter like yourself, like you say, you got to give him his props. But then you had Gerald Austin, who was with a big national group, the Manhattans. I mean, he was with the Manhattans. And for him to branch out and do a show for you was phenomenal also.
Right.
You know, and then you had Gene Chandler, who was a national recording artist. I mean, he was national. He had hits after hits after hit, blockbuster after blockbuster. I mean, he was somebody who did not have to do a Zanzibar venue. He did it because he wanted to, and he wanted to support you. But he did not have to do that kind of venue. I mean, he could have did it a bigger venue somewhere else, you know, Concession Hall or something like that. He could have did that, you know. So you were fortunate to have that kind of people, you know. Let me ask you another question. What is the one common myth about your profession that you would like to debunk?
Well, I like that question. You know, I know you've heard the term janky promoters, you know, and I, you know, they do exist. They do exist, but the promoters that I have become friendly with, or the promoters that I know, and I will shout out a few of them. Robert Smoot, he's a friend of mine. I think he's a great promoter, and you know, and there are several others in the D.C. area that, and there's a lot of upcoming promoters that I think. They're very fair, you know, and they if they make a promise to you, they keep their promise. So I'd like to really extinguish the myth about janky promoters. There are some, but I think promotion is an admirable profession, and I would hope that it would be looked upon in that way. The key to being a great promoter is to keep your word, be honest, and be fair with both the artist, you know, and the venues that you have to negotiate with, and keep your word, you know. If you're supposed to pay somebody at a certain time, pay them when you're supposed to pay them and pay them the amount you're supposed to pay them, you know. Sometimes promoters will do shows and the show may not work out and be successful, and they don't make the money that they had projected, and they try to push that off on the artist. But that's not right. If you lose, you're the promoter, then you take the hit, you know. So don't have the artist or the venue and try to renegotiate. You know, it happens, but you have to step up to the plate. I mean, your reputation is at stake. So, you know, like I said, I just would like to dismiss this thought that a lot of the promoters are janky promoters, unfair and unscrupulous, you know. So that would be my thought on that.
That's excellent. That's excellent to debunk that, because people do have an opinion of what some promoters are, and they use that term janky promoter, because back in the day, the promoters used to gank the artists. The artist would go on stage, and then when they come off stage, the promoter would run out with the money. You know, he would be gone,
right.
They would pay him in dope. I watched Teddy Pendergrass' story, and the white guy, before he took over, he was saying that they would pay some of the people, the singers, in dope rather than money. They would say, "We give you so much crack, cocaine, but you're not going to get no money." You know, they called it Chitlin Circuit, and they got a lot of things went on
right.
in that Chitlin Circuit with promoters that was not scrupulous. But when the white guy got a hold of Teddy Pendergrass, he changed all that. He got a hold of some white promoters and start doing shows. And so promotions is not easy. That's why I want to commend you for what you're doing. It's not an easy thing to do, to get the venue, to get the artists,
right.
to sell the tickets,
right.
and make sure everybody has yeah. something to eat. And then some performers, not only want you to pay them money, they want you to provide comfort. They want you to get them a hotel room. They want you to get them a food. They want you to – it's a lot of back-end stuff you got to provide. It's not an easy thing.
Oh,
and
yes.
then the bigger –
Oh, yes.
The bigger the star is, the more they demand. I got to have Avion water. I got to have fresh carrots. I mean, they get crazy.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. you're absolutely right about that.
You as a promoter, that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, come on. You got to cater to people's personalities and egos, and then you got to worry
yeah.
about the people want certain seats. I mean, I was at an event one time, and it was a little teeny event. It wasn't no big-time event. I mean, we're talking about some little venue, you know, a little restaurant, and they got some little local stars there, and somebody's complaining about a seat. Well, you told me you had to go. I'm supposed to sit over here. Where's my seat? I mean, where you at, man? You're at some. It ain't even that, but you got to deal with all that. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, I agree. You have to deal with a lot of different egos. And but again, as far as my personal experience, again, it goes back to relationships. I mean, I deal with big stars, you know, in the R&B business. And I can truly say that I have no issues with any of the acts that I have worked with, and you know, especially, you know, the leaders of the groups. They're just fantastic, and I appreciate all of them. I mean, when I first started, of course, I was new to the business, and they didn't know me, but as the years have gone by, I can personally say that, you know, many of the leaders of these national acts that are used, I consider them personal friends, and I know that they consider me the same. So I don't, I don't worry about having to. I know what they expect, and I know that they're willing to work with me regardless of the circumstances. So it's really been a pleasure. I've met some great people.
Excellent. Where can our listeners contact you with you or get in contact with you online, or do you have a website? Tell us how they can contact with you.
Oh, yes, I can be reached. Let me tell you about I know you're going to get around to this, but let me just tell you about some things that I do have on the slate right now. I'm doing something on June the 27th at a beautiful venue called Eloquent Touch Ballroom in Marlow Heights. And this is sort of my introduction into getting back into the business. Not the business, but getting back into doing shows. And I'm entitling this one, and it's people smile when they hear it, but I'm entitling this event, GP Promotions Presents Got My Shots, Welcome Back Cabaret, and that's going to take place on June the 27th. That's on a Sunday. It starts at 6 o'clock, and that's at the Eloquent Touch Ballroom. And the other event that I have scheduled right now is I'm going to do a R&B fest, R&B funk fest, as a matter of fact. By the way, the show at the Eloquent Touch Ballroom, that will feature my Feeling the Funk band. I haven't talked about that yet, but that's my prize right there, the Feeling the Funk band, and special guest Forever Yours, OJ's tribute group, fantastic local group, and they will be they will be on the show. The GP Promotions presents Got My Shots, Welcome Back Cabaret, on the 27th. Then I'm going to do something down at Lamont's outdoors. I'm going to do a festival, old school. Actually, I titled that GP Promotions presents Keeping It Old School, and that show is going to feature Harold Melvin's Blue Notes, and also I'm going to do a tribute to my guy Skip Mahoney, because I'm going to have Skip Mahoney's Casuals on that show. And there will be another local act, Anissa. Most people here know her as Twinkie. She's going to be doing an Atlantic Star tribute. And then I'm going to close the show with my Feeling the Funk band. And if anybody, if people in the DMV that don't know about that band, it's a 70s funk band. It's my MD is Keith Showtime Busey. Everyone knows him. And a lot of great local musicians. So in reference to getting in touch with me, I have my own website. That would be www.gp-promotions.com. I'm also on Facebook under my own name, Gerard Pinkney, and I'd love to get a friend request from you. I have several Facebook pages. I have my GP Promotions Facebook page. I also have my Feeling the Funk band Facebook page. So those are the easiest ways to get in touch with me.
Excellent, excellent. I think people will be jumping to get on those shows. You got one of those acts that I'm very familiar with, Harold Melvin's Blue Notes. I mean, we were so blessed to honor them for their lifetime achievement, put them on the front cover of Be There magazine. They came all the way from Philadelphia, at Willie K's, and you know, just an awesome group. I mean, just an awesome group, and that show should be fantastic. And you have your band. Tell us about what it is to create and have your own band, Feeling the Funk band. Tell us about how you created that band.
Right, right. Well, I've always been, I've always been into 70s funk music. You know, like Cameo, Ohio Players, Lakeside and all of those groups. I've always been partial to funk. Well, you know, I work with Keith Busey. You know, he's my MD for a lot of the local acts that I bring to town who don't bring their own band. They play for a lot of the national acts. He has a band called the Unit Band. So I worked very closely with Keith over the past 10 years. But about 2 years ago, I got with Keith and said, man, I'd like for you to help me put together a funk band with the best artists that you know of in the DMV. And he came up with the Feeling the Funk band, and they are some of the best artists. I have Ignatius Mason, who's the lead singer for Heatwave. I have Mousy Thompson, who everybody knows is James Brown's drummer. I have so many of the veteran. I have the NWO Horns with Lenny Harris and Dr. Pryor and Wandell. So the group is a 10-piece funk band, and they are just sensational. If the songs that they play, they cover Cameo and a lot of the 70s funk artists. And I tell you, you wouldn't know the difference. When you hear them perform, you wouldn't know the difference from them and the original records. Really, they really do a great job.
Wow. So that's great, man. You got your own band. You got the two shows coming up that should be very successful. Before we close out, tell us about how you decide to sing yourself. I saw you on a stage, and you performed at the Channel End, and you performed at Blues Alley. How did you get to know that you could actually perform a song yourself?
Well, I mean, I'm a preacher's kid. I grew up singing in choir, so I have a family of singers. I have everybody in my family can sing, but it's mostly been in church. And when you have your own band, you can do stuff like that. So I just stepped out front and gave my version a Skin Tight. So I know that I can carry a tune. Let's just put it like that. I don't call myself a singer, but when you have a great band behind you, most people can sound pretty good if they can carry a tune. So that's my feeling about that. I don't consider myself a singer, but I know that I can carry a tune. So that's the reason that I decided to go out there, just to have some fun. You know, it was just about having some fun for me.
Excellent. This has been one great interview, pulling your eyelids open. In your closing statements, you can touch upon anything that you might want to talk about, that you didn't talk about, or that you might want our listeners to know about you, any trials and tribulations or anything, any hiccups that you might have had or that you've overcome. Tell me anything you want to know in your closing statements.
Okay, I would do that. I know that I've have some success in life, but it was not of my own doing. I'm a person of faith, and I thank God for all of my blessings. I've just been a blessed person, and I know it's not about me. And so that's where I'm at. I try to stay. I'm a humble person because I know it's not about me. So just to close it out, I just want to thank God for all of my blessings, and I pray for you all. I hope that we can get through this pandemic thing. And I also would like to, just before I close, ask for your prayers for my friend DJ Julian Tucker, who's dealing with this COVID situation right now. And also I understand Dan Lewis, who's also very instrumental in the entertainment business. He's dealing with it also, just to shout out a couple of people close to me. So I ask you for prayers for them also. So hopefully I'll see you at a show or two coming up, and I appreciate all of the support I've had over the years. And Russell, thank you for this opportunity.
Well, I appreciate you, and I'm definitely want to put the shout out for the prayers for Danny Lewis. Is an excellent individual. We've been knowing him over 40 years. He's been on most of every show, doing the setups and doing things. There wouldn't even be a show if it wasn't for Danny Lewis. And
right.
I'm definitely familiar with Julian because he was part of the advertising, marketing, branding opportunity that I afforded him. So people, it's this COVID thing is no joke. I tell people of the vid. I mean, they call it the vid. that comedian, he calls it the vid, man. He said he had it, you know, and the comedian from Philadelphia, I mean, he had it.
Yeah.
Tom had it. I mean, so many people have had it. And here's the key. People have had it, and they don't tell you they've had it. So people have came through it. Some people didn't come through it. Some people are going through it. But it's not over yet. We have to protect ourselves and take heed. Even though we've got the shot, you know, even though we've got the vaccine and all that, but you got to know what to do and what not to do, and you can't be fruitfully crazy. You got to take time out to say where you're going to go, what you're going to do. By the fall, by December, it could be something different. But right now, it's only May.
Right.
So don't jump out there like it's over. It's not over till it's over. So, but you're such a caring. I want to ring the bell for you, Gerard, because you're such a caring person to even mention your fellow man or fellow friend in your interview. This is your podcast interview, but you're reaching out to have prayers done for people that you know that are close to you. So I want to commend you for that also. And it's been
Thank
a pleasure
you.
And an honor to even interview you. You're one of the people that I wanted to interview celebrating my 45 years of publishing, because you've been there for the magazine. You've been there for shows for people and things that you've done. And you always carried yourself as a person of class and a gentleman. And just tell us before we go also, tell us about that car you took a picture in front of. Because you also took a picture in front of a elite-type car one time. This is way before people, before Instagram, before Twitter, before you took a picture with a car. Tell us about your car, how you love cars.
Yeah, I do love cars. And that picture that a lot of people speak of, I did a show with Gerald Alston. I took him to Dallas, Texas, and that car was actually inside the venue that we performed at. So I took a picture with the car. Actually, I have pictures with myself, Gerald, and his cousin Dwight, who is now passed, standing in front of that car. But that's how that came about. That was a car that was inside the venue, and that picture seems to just live on. But it was a great picture, a great car.
It's a nice picture.
I don't own the car.
But it's a nice picture. It's a good promo for the GP promotion, and it's a good promo. Again, thank you very much.
Thanks,
it's been a pleasure and honor. This is Pulling Your Eyelids Open, 10 o'clock in the morning. Spread the word. Tell Lottie Dottie everybody. We give it to you straight talk, no chaser. We give it to you where the ghost can get it, but it's real. My name is Russell Price. See you tomorrow morning. It's going to be a big one. I mean, it's going to be bigger than. I mean, every morning is big. You don't know who it's going to be, but tune in to find out.